Welcome to the Office of Facilities, Environmental, and Cultural Resources podcast. My name is Deborah Thompson and your host this morning. Today is Thursday, February 17th, and we are coming to you from Albuquerque, New Mexico. It's an absolute beautiful morning in the land of enchantment, and I hope you are enjoying the same type of weather wherever you are. For the next half hour, we'll be discussing the update of the Facility School Construction Handbook. Our guest this morning is Barbara Borgeson from the Office of Facilities Management and Construction. A member of the Comanche Nation, she is an architect and the acting chief of the Division of Planning and Design at OFMC. Welcome, Barb. So we can have a little bit of history here. To familiarize our listeners on the handbook, can you give us maybe a little background, like when and how did the handbook take shape?
Sure. Our previous handbook was issued in 1995 and gave the requirements for mechanical, electrical, plumbing requirements for our school facilities. Well, since that time, technology has developed in the construction industry. Construction methods have been developed, as well as OFMC policy and executive orders and laws and regulations regarding construction of our schools. So, we decided we need to update our 1995 guidelines and keep up with the latest technology. So in keeping with the Office of Facilities Management and Construction policy of requiring our new construction projects to be LEED certified, we felt we had to provide that guidance as well in the form of design guidelines and the accompanying volume, school facilities templates, where we also embody the space guidelines issued in 2005. So we provide visual guidance and verbal guidance on design.
I see. So what effect did the implementation of the handbook have on school construction?
Well, we were able to capture the requirements of LEED certification in our guidance in the handbook as it applies to mechanical systems, wall systems, plumbing, and other requirements. That's our way of trying to ensure that our schools meet energy savings requirements.
Well, do you have any examples? Like maybe, is there a huge cost savings?
We have cost savings as well as a way of incorporating lessons learned on our previous projects. So we are able to identify the HVAC systems that work more efficiently in our schools. We're able to identify wall systems that work the best. And by incorporating these lessons learned, we're looking at really the life cycle of our buildings, and we're looking at addressing the total life cycle of our buildings to include ease of maintenance and operations as well.
So currently, OFMC is updating and revising the handbook. So can you tell us the process? You know, how will this happen?
Well, the design handbook is a living document. That's the way we issued it in 2007. So as the document was implemented and architects and engineers have been using it in design, as well as our facility managers, we've gathered a lot of lessons learned as we have utilized the handbook. So we want to incorporate that as well as update it in accordance with the updated OFMC policy on LEED, and that is that the Green Building Council now is requiring any new school construction to be certified under LEED for Schools, and the current handbook is written in accordance with LEED for New Construction.
Okay, other than LEED, what other things are we going to update? For instance, is there domestic water, any of the other hot issues in construction
right
to be addressed?
We're finding in our work with our environmental assessments that we have additional requirements that we need to identify for consideration by our designers, and that includes domestic water systems, site water, stormwater runoff, those sorts of issues that have become high profile within the department. We also have another requirement, which is the that was issued last January by the department, and that's the Sustainable Building Implementation Plan for DOI. So we want to also make our designers aware of that requirement, so we'll be including those requirements, because there was an assumption that LEED certification automatically addressed those Sustainable Building Implementation Plan requirements. And recent audits done by some of our sister bureaus, such as National Park Service, Bureau of Rec, have identified that even though we meet LEED requirements and we get LEED certified buildings, those elements don't meet the requirements of the Sustainable Building Implementation Plan. So we're making sure that we're addressing both those requirements. Another thing I'd like to add is that having these requirements also enables our school boards under 297 grants and our tribes under 638 contracts that take on the design and construction of projects. Having this list of requirements enables them to have successful projects as well, because the requirements are outlined specifically, submittal requirements. We've incorporated safety's requirements, the Division of Safety's requirements, in the form of templates and written requirements within the design handbook. So that also enables a successful outcome with our grantees and our tribes when they undertake the projects as well.
So we, you mentioned earlier that it's a living document and it's continuously updated. About how often do you update this manual?
Well, when we first started this endeavor, we looked at updating possibly every 2 years. We're past that time frame right now. But in order to keep up with new technologies and also the LEED requirements, we feel like two years is a good time frame to work with. And we'll try to adhere to that as we go on with this effort.
Okay. In fiscal year 2010, it was a banner year for new school and dormitory openings. There were 14 major projects that were completed, which is very impressive. So what's the status of our school construction this year?
We've got several projects underway, and our normal time frame is 2 years for completion of construction. So this year, we've done mostly groundbreaking, so we anticipate we've got really about six major replacement school projects underway right now that are scheduled for completion first quarter 2012.
Once the handbook is completed, what effect will this have on our school construction?
Well, one good element, or one interesting element, is that, as I mentioned before, we want to be in compliance with LEED for schools. And one of the prerequisites, i.e. requirement for certification under LEED for schools, is energy savings measures as well as acoustic requirements. So we found that lessons learned in acoustics, we've learned throughout our projects, that has been a key element in providing a successful learning environment for students and teachers. And recent studies have indicated that enhanced acoustics not only helps students learn because they can hear the teacher, it helps the teacher because he or she doesn't have to up the volume on their voice and incur sore throats and that sort of thing. So it's been documented that teacher absenteeism has been reduced just with this enhanced acoustic requirement.
I agree. So can you tell us, what does the future hold for school construction?
Well, as you may have noticed in the news, the president recently issued his 2012 budget. And there's not much funding in place for replacement schools in that budget. But we are looking at, we want to be prepared for any funding that might come our way. So we're undertaking the planning of the remaining schools on the new school list that was published in the Federal Register in March 2004. And those remaining schools will start planning this year. and try to be prepared for additional funds that will might possibly come our way.
Can you tell us what the role of safety would be in construction?
Well, safety is an important partner in our efforts in construction. One of the laws that we need to comply with is the accessibility laws. And safety has been a great partner in helping us achieve those requirements, which include not only accessibility to facilities, but also correct plumbing heights for accessibility by not only staff, but students. And we're really proud of the partnership that we've forged with the Division of Safety in meeting those requirements during construction. They're our partner in ensuring that our facilities are accessible and usable by all who come through the doors.
Well, we really look forward to seeing the benefits of the updated handbook, which without a doubt will provide our Native children an enhanced learning environment. Can you tell us how the handbook fits in with the No Child Left Behind Act?
Sure. Right now, the No Child Left Behind Rulemaking Committee is in the final stages of developing some recommendations that will then go out in a tribal consultation process. And one of their charges is to look at criteria for determining up-and-coming new construction projects for replacement schools. So we'll be looking for their recommendations that will go out to the tribes, and we're looking forward to getting their feedback on how the determination will be made for upcoming replacement school projects.
Okay. Well, we're just about out of time. So thanks, Barb, for being the first guest of the OFCER podcast. I'd also like to thank the listeners for allowing us to be a part of their busy morning. And until next month, this is Deborah Thompson from the Division of Safety and Risk Management, leaving you with one final thought. Mission first, safety always. Thank you, and have a nice day.